The Gentle Dentist continues to hear compliments from their patients.
I am so glad we found the Gentle Dentist. It is truly pain-free. Not just for me, but I'm so happy my children have had such a wonderful experience. They love the Smile Club.
I'm a business owner, so every minute of my time is valuable. I love that they are so respectful of my time.
The Gentle Dentist in Worthington. Call now. New patients receive a free sonic toothbrush with a cleaning and exam. Call 614-431-3311.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
There's something especially disturbing about a murder case that hinges not on DNA, not on surveillance footage, not on a smoking gun, but a chain of assumptions. The state of Utah versus Corey Richens has always been one of those cases from the very beginning. Prosecutors told the public that Corey, a real estate agent and mother of three, unalived her husband, Eric Richens, by slipping a fatal dose of fentanyl into his drink. But they didn't say that they had the fentanyl. They didn't say they had the pills or the confession or a witness who saw the act. What they had was a theory, and a theory just got punched in the face by their own witness. Let's start there, shall we? Wait a second, Tony. This sounds different than most of the story you've talked about. Yeah, it does. It does, because things change. People change. Things move around. So it's always good to keep an open mind and roll with the punches. I don't know where I'm rolling in this story yet, but let's roll together and see where we land. In October 25, Corey's defense team filed two blistering motions, one to reconsider bail and another to compel what they say is exculpatory evidence the prosecution has been sitting on for months. At the center of this procedural earthquake is a man named Robert Crozer, who the state previously identified as the supplier of the fentanyl used in the unaliving. I hate using that word, but I'd like you to see the video. According to the state, Crozer sold the drugs to Corey's housekeeper, Carmen Lauber, who then passed them along to Corey. It's a clean little pipeline on paper until Crozer changed his story. In a sworn affidavit filed with the court on October 2nd, Crozer says flat out, "I did not sell that drug to Carmen Lauber. I sold her Oxy." He claims that when he was first interviewed by investigators in 23, he was detoxing in jail and barely remembers what he said. Months later, in April 25, prosecutors from the Summit County Attorney's Office circled back and asked him again. Crozer says he told them the same thing. It wasn't fentanyl. And he's sure of it now. But according to the defense, the state never told them about that April meeting. It took a year and a half in jail and a mountain of evidence before this recantation came to light. And now it's here. And it could be potentially devastating. If the state cannot place fentanyl in the hands of Corey Richens, the defense writes, the state has no case. That's not hyperbole. That's not spin. That's a fact. Because if Lauber didn't receive the fentanyl from Crozer, then the entire testimony collapses. And if the state's only tie between Corey and the drug is based on a chain that now looks imaginary, then all they have left is speculation. And there's a lot of speculation in this case. Let's be crystal clear. The state has no physical fentanyl pills tied to Corey. No, none were found. None were tested. None were logged. No transactional trail. No forensic residue. What they have are statements. Statements from Lauber. Statements from Crozer. Statements that now don't match. Doesn't look good when you're trying to prosecute a case. Now, that doesn't mean that this just sets her free or that she has nothing to do with this, by any means, not at all. But it's a crack. Or more like a sinkhole. That's why you got to make sure all your T's are crossed and your I's are dotted and your case is solid. The prosecution, for their part, has not publicly responded as of our recording here. In court, they have a 14-day window to answer the motions. And when they do, they'll likely argue that the case is not solely dependent on this one transaction. They'll say that Corey may have obtained fentanyl elsewhere, possibly from a handyman, as hinted in earlier filings. They'll lean on motive, the insurance policies, the financial pressure, the alleged poisoning attempt a month earlier on Valentine's Day. But what they cannot sidestep is that their primary link between Corey and the murder weapon just broke apart on the record. That's not good. Hope those other links are pretty damn strong. And they might be. You can't look at this case and go, nothing suspicious here. There's a lot of suspicious here. There's a lot of reasons Corey Richens is behind bars at this moment in time. It doesn't look good. And if it's just a big string of really horrible decisions by one woman that look really questionable because she has no sense of others and how they're going to view her, most narcissists have none of that. And who knows if she is? But again, it just feels like every damn case leads to that. So let's for a moment play the game that she is. She's not going to see it. She's not going to see that actions do look horrible. But again, narcissism doesn't mean you're a murderer either. I'm playing devil's advocate for a moment here. Maybe you should too. You want to look at all angles of the case before you just dig in. You really should never just dig in unless it's like, you know, it's damn near impossible that it's nobody else. There's possibilities here. There's possibilities he OD'd himself. Now there's a possibility that she laced something with fentanyl. That's why we're doing this. That's why there's a trial. That's why there's going to be all of these facts put in front of jurors who will decide. The defense says prosecutors have known since April about all this. Again, not good. You got to play by the rules. And if you have exculpatory evidence, you got to put it out there. And it may not be exculpatory. You may think it might be, but you got to throw it out there. Crosser gave his second interview and clarified his earlier statements back in April. According to Corey's attorneys, the state chose not to disclose that information, a move that could amount to a Brady violation if true, and that's a constitutional problem. Prosecutors are required to disclose any material that would help the defense, period, end of discussion. I don't care if you like her, you hate her, this is how you have to play the game. Just like you can't have your clerk of court trying to influence jurors in the Alec Murdaugh case. A man that clearly shouldn't be behind bars. But somebody decides to, I'm going to bend the rules a little bit this way, my way, and hopefully nobody notices. Well, guess what? When they do, all of this that you just collapsed, it's on you. So if the court finds that Crosser's denial was known material and buried, the consequences go beyond bail. It could shake the entire case loose. It could. It's happened before. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's remember how this all started. On March 4th of 2022, Eric Richens was found dead in the couple's home in Camas, Utah. An autopsy later revealed he died from a lethal dose of illicit fentanyl. Prosecutors say Corey poisoned him after allegedly trying and failing the month before. She then bizarrely published a children's book about grief and loss, allegedly painting herself as a widow trying to help her children cope, all while secretly facing mounting evidence and eventually criminal charges. The optics are brutal, but optics don't convict people. Evidence does. And the evidence is where this case gets fragile. The prosecution's entire timeline assumes that Corey intentionally administered fentanyl, acquired it illicitly, and covered her tracks. But if you remove the how from that story, if you remove the supply trail, it suddenly becomes a lot harder to prove premeditated murder. And now, thanks to Crosser, that how is full of holes. Worse yet for the state, there's a growing perception that they're drowning the defense in evidence. 11 terabytes of data, according to Corey's team. A digital avalanche. Well, it's not unusual in high-profile murder cases. What is unusual is that the judge himself recently directed the prosecution to clean it up. Organize the files, label the exhibits, stop overwhelming the defense with raw, unstructured data. That directive came before Crozer's affidavit dropped. Now it looks even more like the prosecution is scrambling to protect a case that's coming apart at the seams. So where does this leave Corey? Still in jail, still fighting. This is her third attempt at bail, and it may be her strongest. Her attorneys are now arguing that the state's primary theory of the case is no longer viable, and that keeping her locked up based on faulty, possibly suppressed information is not just unjust, it's unconstitutional. And the trial? Still set for February 23rd to 26th. Jury selection beginning February 10th. That date hasn't moved. And in the reality of things, it's not far away. It's like 4 months. I know, scary to think of, right? If this motion gains traction, if the court finds even a shred of credibility in the defense's claims of suppression or mishandling, it could upend that timeline entirely. We're not talking about a technicality. We're talking about the fundamental question at the heart of the American legal system. Can the government prove it? And if it can't, does it get to bluff, to bury interviews, to rely on assumptions? The bigger lesson here isn't about whether Corey Richens is guilty or innocent. That question will be decided in court by a jury after every piece of evidence is aired and challenged. The real point, the one that should matter to everyone, is this. When you build a murder case on a certain witness, you better be sure those links don't snap. Because the courtroom doesn't care how much you think something looks bad. It only cares whether you can prove it. And right now, the state can't prove where the fentanyl came from. At least not out here in the ether. That's not a technical problem. That's the whole case. If you're looking for a murderess, prove the murder. If you're looking for a supplier, prove the supply. But if you're relying on the man who now under oath says that he sold someone oxy, not fentanyl, you're not in a murder trial territory anymore. You're in a land of wishful thinking that doesn't hold up under cross. So the question now is not just what happens next, it's whether this case, as it's currently built, should proceed at all without a serious reset. Because if you don't just lose a witness, you lose the narrative. And when you lose a narrative, the jury starts to wonder what else the state got wrong. This case is unraveling, slowly, publicly, one affidavit at a time. And no matter how it ends, this much is clear. Somewhere between ambition and overreach, the story of Corey Richens stopped being simple and started being suspect. Tell me your thoughts. Is she guilty? Is she innocent? Is this just, wow, this guy coming out and saying that now? Pure dumb luck for Corey. What do you think? Let me know in the comment section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, and you'll find us there. Do the same search wherever you're downloading podcasts to find us where you're getting podcasts, and press subscribe on any platform so you don't miss any of our coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.